will decide to make a contribution in support of this commercial-free, listener-sponsored radio station.
Rights and Justice, where we educate and we agitate and organize to empower we the people for another world is possible, and we are the ones to make it so. Now, to educate, agitate, and organize, our special broadcast, Malcolm X and the End of White World Supremacy. Against the tide of plutocrats and their corporate media, to distort the legacy and international image of Malcolm X, El-Haj Malik al-Shabazz, we are here to further secure and extend the position of Malcolm X within the collective consciousness of Africans, oppressed peoples, and workers worldwide. We are intent that Malcolm's teachings and spirit proliferate in America. 56 years ago, more than a life of a great leader was lost, the country lost a chance to address the racial issues that continue to plague it and rendered its proclamation of democracy a fraud.
Final hour. In this quiet place, Harlem has come to bid farewell to one of its brightest hopes, extinguished now and gone from us forever. It is not in the memory of man that this beleaguered, unfortunate, but nonetheless proud community has found a braver, more gallant young champion than this Afro-American who lies before us, unconquered still. I say the word again as he would want me to. Afro-American. Afro-American Malcolm. Malcolm had stopped being Negro years ago. It had become too small, too puny, too weak a word for him. Malcolm was bigger than that. Malcolm had become an Afro-American, and he wanted so desperately that we, that all his people, would become Afro-Americans too. There are those who still consider it their duty, as friends of the Negro people, to tell us to revile him, to flee even from the presence of his memory, to save ourselves by writing him out of the history of our turbulent times. And we will smile. They will say that he is of hate, a fanatic, a racist, who can only bring evil to the cause for which you struggle. And we will answer and say unto them, did you ever talk to Brother Malcolm? Did you ever touch him or have him smile at you? Did you ever really listen to him?
You haven't done the right thing.
Was he ever himself associated with violence or any public disturbance? For if you did, you would know him. And if you knew him, you would know why we must honor him. Malcolm was our manhood, our living black manhood. This was his meaning to his people, and in honoring him, we honor the best in ourselves. However much we may have differed with him or with each other about him and his value as a man, let his going from us serve only to bring us together now. Consigning these mortal remains to earth, the common mother of all, secure in the knowledge that what we place in the ground is no more now a man, but a seed, which after the winter of our discontent will come forth again to meet us, and we shall know him then for what he was and is, a prince, our own black shining prince, who didn't hesitate to die because he loved us so.
Malcolm X is you, all of you. And you are Malcolm X.
I'm 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 Malcolm X.
I am 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 Malcolm X.
As Brother Malcolm said, we declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be given the rights of a human being, to be respected as a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence.
By any means necessary.
Claims by a former police officer who has now died are implicating the NYPD in the murder of civil rights leader Malcolm X. New York One's Ron Lee is in Washington Heights at the site where Malcolm X was assassinated. Ron.
Dane, the explosive allegations that were made earlier today come just one day before the 56th anniversary of Malcolm X's assassination. As I said earlier today, here at the Shabazz Center, a letter was read out loud that was part of a confession from a former undercover police officer with the NYPD. His name was Raymond Wood, and he did not want the letter made public until after his death. Now, in that letter, Wood, who was black, alleges that the NYPD and the FBI had both conspired to undermine the legitimacy of the civil rights movement and its leaders, including civil rights icon Malcolm X. And he said his job was to infiltrate those civil rights organizations and to encourage leaders and members to commit felony acts so that the FBI could discredit and arrest its leaders. Let's listen to part of that letter being read out loud.
I participated in actions that in hindsight were deplorable and detrimental to the advancement of my own black people. My actions on behalf of the New York City Police Department, BOSSE, were done under duress and fear.
And the letter would also explain that one of his tasks was to ensure that key members of Malcolm X's crowd control security detail were arrested just prior to the assassination in order to guarantee that the civil rights leader would not have door security at the Audubon Ballroom where he was killed on February 21st, 1965. As a result, Wood admitted to luring two key members of that security detail as part of a plot to bomb the Statue of Liberty. Meantime, three of Malcolm X's daughters were in attendance today as the letter was read. Daughter Ilyasa Shabazz offered some brief remarks.
Any evidence that provides greater insight into the truth behind that terrible tragedy should be thoroughly investigated.
What also says Thomas Johnson was wrongfully convicted in connection with the murder of Malcolm X, saying Johnson was arrested to protect his cover. Johnson died back in 2009. Meantime, New York One has reached out to the NYPD and to the FBI seeking comment for this story. We're in Washington Heights. Ron Lee, New York One. Dean.
All right, Ron, thank you.
That always saddens me is that as we look globally at the problems of African American people and African leadership, African people in general, we find that there's some disturbing historical parallels between what happens at the mass level, if you will.
Journalist Samori Marksman.
If you look historically in our lifetime at the great African leaders who have been cut down in the prime of their lives, whether we talk about Malcolm X, or whether we're talking about people like Walter Rodney of Guyana, or whether we're talking about Murtala Mohammed of Nigeria, Amilcar Cabral, Eduardo Mondlane, we could go down, the list is empty, it's endless. We find some disturbing parallels that invariably, with very few exceptions, the hands of the assassin always turns out to be one of us. And we need to deal with that reality. Before these leaders are taken out, we hear many people calling for them to be taken out. Then there's a post-murder sort of psychosis that is also baffling to me. After he's murdered, there's the denial thing. Then there's the braggadocio thing. And then there's the embracement thing. You know, we move to a point where even the ones who did the killings begin to embrace those who have been killed. I don't understand it. We need to understand it. I don't understand it. There's also a methodology of brutality, both in rhetoric and in terms of the physical destruction of these leaders. If you look at what happened to Brother Walter Rodney in Guyana, he was blown away by an African man who professed to be a Marxist, just as Walter Rodney was. The brother was cut in half, severed. If you look at what happened to Eduardo Mondlane in Mozambique, he was of Mozambique in 1967, his head was split open by a bomb. Maurice Bishop in 1983, when they lined that brother and sisters like Jacqueline Kreft up against the wall and shot her in her stomach when they heard that she was supposed to be pregnant. Again, the very people who killed him later on, of course, after boasting that they had done so, we have the tapes, they called in our radio station on October 20th of 1983, bragging how the proletarian revolution had just begun and how they had been victorious. 2 days later, they were whining that they had nothing to do with it. And of course, we have supposed progressives going around trying to free them from the from prison. If we look at other examples, whether it's Murtala Mohammed, and we look at other examples, and we see the same pattern of destruction and brutality against our own people. So I would hope that today, as we look at the realities in which we are meeting here today, when we look at the national situation in which our people find ourselves, we're here to search for answers, to go move beyond this. At this point, I'd like to welcome the next speaker, Professor Bill Sales, who's the author of also a new book on Malcolm X. Brother Sales, for years, has written a number of articles and pamphlets on the works of Malcolm X and other African-American and African leaders.
Thank you, Brother Samore. It's my privilege to be here again at our annual commemoration of our black shining prince, Malcolm X. I'd like to contextualize the latter period in Malcolm's political development and the period of his assassination. This contextualization will allow us to answer the question not only
why Malcolm was killed, but why he was killed when he was killed. It will also tell us who benefited objectively from his assassination. In the period of 1963 to 1965, the civil rights movement was in a crisis. Civil rights legislation passed, but within all of those victories were being sown the seeds of a more fundamental defeat. First of all, we were winning victories against legal discrimination when more and more black people were facing a new kind of discrimination. Over half of the population of black people in the first half of the 20th century have moved out of the South and moved into northern and western ghettos, where the characteristic feature of oppression was not legal discrimination, but was the de facto situation that we face day to day. This movement of our people out of the rural South into the urban north was giving rise to a new class, but it also was facing a crisis. More and more of our people in the cities were becoming long-term unemployed. More and more we needed a nationwide movement to address these issues of de facto discrimination. What we had, in fact, was a regional, southern-based movement which was not addressing those fundamental issues. So we have, our folks in the ghettos in crisis. The folks who've been around for a while weren't experiencing any improvement. They're getting frustrated, and so they hit the bricks and started to rebel. As this was going on, the previous supported elements of the ruling class, which had supported the Southern Civil Rights Movement, began to erode and then defect. As the movement came north, people began to discover all kinds of reasons why they could no longer support the movement. We began to lose control of the nation's attention. That is, we no longer were able to monopolize popular concerns. That is the civil rights movement. Rival movements emerged to compete with the national psychology, the student power movement, the feminist movement, and of course, above all, the Vietnam War movement. A movement which made many in this country believe that it was not possible to fund racial democracy at home while waging an imperialistic war abroad. Also, the civil rights movement had not generated any fundamental ideological critique of the American dream. It had exploited all the inconsistencies, all the contradictions between what the country was supposed to be and what it was actually doing. But it needed something more in the area of ideas to push the struggle forward. And last but not least, the security apparatus of the state in the early spring of 1963 had determined that the movement had become objectively a threat to the American social order, and that it had to be more militantly monitored and, in fact, had to be in some sense crushed. Malcolm was one of the first to see that the American civil rights movement was in a crisis. All right? This crisis demanded a new and a different direction if we were going to make the transition from a reformist regional movement to a revolutionary international movement. He recognized that a commitment to revolution was absolutely necessary if we were to be free. But his perspective on revolution deepened and broadened in the last 11 months of his life. He began to recognize that if we were going to make successful revolution in America, that there were certain international prerequisites. Right? We needed a high degree of cooperation and coordination across national boundaries between various oppressed races, peoples, and nationalities. It meant that we had to speak with a single voice. Therefore, it was necessary for him to come home from Africa and be about the process of building the black united front. That's what the organization Afro-American Unity was all about. With that black united front, black people in America would have for the first time an international personality and could make demands in the name of the nationality before international forums. So it's absolutely crucial to kill Malcolm and to kill him in 1965 before he institutionalized his two links, domestically with the new social force, right? The brothers, the urban street people, the young angry men in our community. And secondly, where he would institutionalize our struggle with the anti-imperialist, anti-NATO forces in the world under the leadership of people like Kwame Nkrumah, Gamal Abdel Nasser, Sukarno, Egypt, Indonesia, Mao Zedong, Fidel Castro, and a host of other people.
ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Ooh, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs.
You were listening, of course, to Bob Marley, Redemption Song, but you were listening just prior to that. They melded together perfectly. An extraordinary forum introduced and convened by Samori Marksman, a Caribbean Pan-Africanist Marxist journalist, historian, and program director then at WBAI before his untimely passing. And with Samori, Professor William Sales, author of From Civil Rights to Black Liberation, Malcolm X and the Organization of Afro-American Unity, and Southern Africa, Black America, Same Struggle, Same Fight. This 3.5-hour historic, insightful, probative forum also included Professor Tony Martin, Trinidadian-born scholar of Africana Studies, who published over 10 books, who was a lawyer, who was an economist, and wrote extensively on the Jamaican political activist Marcus Garvey, which had an enormous influence on Malcolm X, and part of that forum as well, Professor Zach Kondo, who wrote the explosive expose unraveling the assassination of Malcolm X, and Conrad Mohammed, the Nation of Islam's New York representative and minister of the Nation of Islam in Harlem, who was ironically a facilitator for a fundraiser to support Kwabila Shabazz, Malcolm X's daughter, who was implicated in an alleged plot to kill Louis Farrakhan. The purpose of the forum was one of establishing the agency, for those who drank the Kool-Aid and actually pulled the trigger. But even more essential was the question of understanding who wanted Malcolm eliminated. And at the time when he was emerging as a leader on the world scene with a pan-African internationalist worldview and was organizing a complement to the Organization of African Unity, here, the Organization of Afro-American Unity in the U.S. Now, this forum, along with the forum at the Schomburg Center with leaders from Africa and the Caribbean talking about Malcolm's growing authority on the world stage, they're yours. They're yours for your commitment to this station. Full feature-length documentaries and more than 6 hours of Malcolm's most insightful speeches, a complete study guide, a complete curriculum, all for a pledge of $185 when you call and ask for Malcolm X, the End of White World Supremacy. I even like saying that. Malcolm X, yes, the End of White World Supremacy. 6 documentaries. three major film forums additionally of historic import, and 6 hours more of the speeches of Malcolm X. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. I don't want to take too much time to ask you to support this station. And when you do today, by asking for Malcolm X, the end of white world supremacy, you will support yourself. You will support your community. You will support the quest for truth. You will support the quest for justice. And you will help if you follow the teachings. All of us follow the teachings of Malcolm X. We will begin to be closer to the promise that has never been fulfilled of the realization of democracy in this country. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. We can't even begin to do that until we, as white people and others, decolonize our minds and acknowledge the falsity of American exceptionalism. Malcolm, the brilliant analyst, percolating up from the grassroots, who suffered every indignity of white supremacy and triumphed over it. 212-209-2950. Malcolm X, the end of white world supremacy, a $185 contribution. Go to your phone now. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Malcolm X, the end of white world supremacy, a $185 contribution, and you will support this extraordinarily important radio station that has been speaking truth to power, and more importantly than that, has been acting to educate, agitate, and organize to empower we, the people, for over 60 years. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Malcolm X, the end of white world supremacy, a $185 contribution, and you will support this extraordinarily important radio station. Again, you will get three forums that are available absolutely no place else. They are part of our exclusive archives, but we're making them available to you. And with my dear, dear friend, brother, and educator, teacher, journalist, Samori Marksman. I mean, you've got to hear. You've got to hear Zach Kondo. You've got to hear more of Bill Sayles, of Tony Martin, of Samori Marksman, indeed of Comrade Mohammed. You want to know who killed Malcolm? Well, it's all there, and it's been there. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Malcolm X, the end of white world supremacy, a $185 contribution, and you will support this extraordinarily important radio station. 212-209-2950. And the role of the state and the role of the intelligence division of the NYPD, well, yeah, let's flesh it out. Come on, Cyrus Vance, step it up. Get with it. The names of the individual trigger people have been there for more than a decade, but we understand what is the most critical thing is the role of the state in engineering the destruction of this leader growing in stature in the world community. Now, more than ever, Malcolm X, the end of white world supremacy, $185 contribution, the six documentaries, the three filmed forums, hours and hours of brilliance, analysis, thought to contribute to our decolonizing our minds and the speeches of Malcolm, lectures of Malcolm, more than 6 hours, invaluable, except if we want to put a denomination on the intellectuality and what it brings, what Malcolm brings, yes, the black shining prince, to the struggle for liberation. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy, a $185 contribution, and you will support this extraordinarily important radio station. 212-209-2950. We're going to return now. You've been doing great. You're rising to the occasion. Keep calling 212-209-2950. Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy, a $185 contribution, and you will support this extraordinarily important radio station. 212-209-2950. Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy, $185 contribution for a priceless package.
Tonight, during the few moments that we have, we're going to have a little chat, like brothers and sisters and friends and probably enemies too, about the prospect for peace or prospect for freedom in 1965. But you notice I almost slipped there and said peace. Actually, you can't separate peace from freedom. No one can be at peace unless he has his freedom. You can't separate the two. And this is the thing that makes 1965 so explosive and so dangerous. The people in this country who in the past have been at peace and been peaceful were that way only because they didn't know what freedom was. They let somebody else define it for them. But today, 1965, you find those who have not had freedom and not in a position to define freedom, they're beginning to define it for themselves now. And as they get in a position intellectually to define freedom for themselves, they see that they don't have it. And it makes them less peaceful or less inclined toward peace. So in discussing this topic tonight, prospects for freedom in 1965, I think we have to go back at least 12 years or 10 years to the time when the struggle of the black man in America began to be projected into the limelight, not only in this country, but throughout the world. It started primarily with the Supreme Court decision, so-called desegregation decision, and I should say so-called desegregation, so-called decision, because there has been some doubt as to what they really handed down. One of the main ingredients in the struggle of the black man in America for the past 12 years has been the black Muslim movement. No one can deny the role that the black Muslim movement has played in America during the past 12 years, has been one of the main ingredients in the stepped-up militancy on the part of black people throughout this country. No matter what direction the black Muslim movement itself was headed in, no matter what its own organizational philosophy was, and no matter what other people thought about it, no matter what their personal opinions were of the black Muslim movement, still it cannot be denied that that movement, because of its uncompromising stand and uncompromisingly militant approach to things, forced other civil rights organizations to be more militant than they normally would have been, and forced many of the civil rights leaders definitely to be more militant than they ever would have thought of being. So the militancy of the black man in America during the past 10 years, in my opinion, can be traced largely to the existence and presence of the movement, which I'm referring to now for purpose of identification as the black Muslim movement. its contribution to the black struggle for freedom in this country was militancy. It made many of our people dare to get loud for the first time in 400 years. Many of the black leaders of the civil rights movement dare to get loud for the first time. I mean really loud for the first time in 400, nearly 400 years of our being in this country. They got more militant than they intended to be, and they made many of the people become more militant than they intended for the people to be. It had a chain reaction effect that actually got out of control somewhat, because the leaders themselves never intended and never do intend for our people to go too far. Their primary purpose in our midst has always been to contain our struggle, not lead our struggle. Proof of which, seldom are they seen until the irresponsible elements in the black community begin to explode. And then they go all the way around the country to grab one of them from wherever he's traveling and bring him in to cool things down, to tell us to be cool, or tell us to take it easy, don't rock the boat. This is their function. This is their role. At least it has been up until recent times. They gave respectability to the civil rights groups and gave acceptability to the civil rights groups. 10 years ago or more, the NAACP was looked upon as a radical leftist, almost subversive movement. And then when the black Muslim movement came along, the power structure said, thank the Lord for Roy Wilkins and the NAACP. This is true. Pick up any newspaper that was printed 10 years ago and read what was being said about CORE and NAACP and Urban League and some of these other groups. They were considered irresponsible. They were considered moving too fast. They were considered almost extremists. And then when they looked around one day and found someone talking about all of them are devils, they were all night looking up Roy Wilkins and James Farmer and the Right Reverend Dr. King and some of the others to soothe them and keep them thinking that all of our people didn't think like that. So it did contribute its part in the struggle. It made Roy Wilkins acceptable and honorable and responsible. And sometimes today I think he's forgotten what we've done for him. This is one of the reasons why Tom Mboya has lasted so long in Kenya. During the Mau Mau uprising, when white people were scared to death, not only in Kenya, but throughout Africa, and not only in Africa, but throughout the world, because there were people who looked just like the Kikuyu right here in New York, in Mississippi, and other places. When Mau Mau was on the rampage and Jomo Kenyatta was given the image of a monster, because his own image was so ghastly in the sight of whites, the image of Tom Mboya immediately became acceptable, because Kenyatta seemed to be so irresponsible, Mboya became responsible. He became acceptable, responsible, you know, and made everybody happy. So they supported him. They backed him up, made him prominent throughout the world. Kenyatta made him. He didn't make himself. And he was intelligent enough to know it. So when Kenyatta got out, he supported Kenyatta. He realized that the contribution of Kenyatta made him what he was. And because he was intelligent enough, he was blessed with sufficient insight. It took the Mau Mau to bring independence, not only to Kenya. It took the Mau Mau to bring independence to most of Africa. When a man is sad, over his miserable condition, he does nothing to change it. Sadness doesn't change anything. It's only when he gets mad that he changes it. It takes madness to change it. One of the things I noticed when I was in Africa traveling around, I noticed many Africans who were still colonized, still exploited, still oppressed. And one of the things all of them had in common was they seemed sad. They would discuss their sad plight, but they weren't ready to really do anything to change it. They seemed to be waiting on some miracle. But the contrasting difference between them and what happened in Kenya, the Kikuyu got mad. They just didn't care what the consequences were. They knew they
Well, you were listening to Malcolm X, who delivered the speech titled Prospects for Freedom in 1965 to an organization of Afro-American Unity Rally at the Militant Labor Forum in New York City. That was on January 7th, 1965. A month later, he was assassinated. And it was inspired, the speech, by the Organization of African Unity in the summer of 64. And then he founded the Organization of Afro-American Unity, which advocated for independent black institutions and black participation in, interesting, electoral politics, but with caveats, which we'll hear more about. But I want to just give you a slice of that and tell you that when you pledge for Malcolm X, the end of white world supremacy, for a $185 contribution, you'll be able to get that speech in full, which is more than an hour, along with 6 hours of Malcolm speeches, along with 6 full feature-length documentaries, along with 3 forums that are hours in duration that do an analysis of Malcolm within the times and really flesh out the issue of the role of the state as we look at who killed Malcolm. Ah, the film's Brother Minister, The Assassination of Malcolm X, the film's Seventh Song, Make It Plain, Malcolm in His Own Words. These are stunning, stunning documentaries. Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy, a $185 contribution, and you will support this extraordinarily important radio station. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy, a $185 contribution. 212-209-2950. Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy, $185 contribution for a priceless package. 212-209-2950. The covert war against Malcolm X, and that's what I want to play a clip from now. I want to play this clip from one of the documentaries we want to make available to you for your contribution of $185 to sustain WBAI and to get Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy, a $185 contribution. Go to your phone now. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy, a $185 contribution, and you will support this extraordinarily important radio station that has been speaking truth to power, and more importantly than that, has been acting to educate, agitate, and organize to empower we, the people, for over 60 years. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy, a $185 contribution. Again, you will get 3 forums that are available absolutely no place else. They are part of our exclusive archives, but we're making them available to you. And with my dear, dear friend, brother, and educator, teacher, journalist Samori Marksman. I mean, you've got to hear Zach Kondo. You've got to hear more of Bill Sayles, of Tony Martin, of Samori Marksman. Indeed, of Comrade Mohammed. You want to know who killed Malcolm? Well, it's all there and it's been there. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy, a $185 contribution. Prima facie evidence, this is, of who engineered to kill Malcolm and how Malcolm outwitted his FBI tormentors, proving you can kill a man, but not his song when it's sung the whole world round. And so now I want to play this clip of Malcolm from the covert war against Malcolm X, filmed by and brought to you by a journalistic giant who we lost as well, Gil Noble, but preserved for you with this film. Let's listen to the covert war against Malcolm X. We will understand who was involved, the primary hand, the real mover and shaker, and who killed Malcolm. And here, Malcolm jousting with the FBI, but unbeknownst to them. Let's listen.
Welcome to Like It Is. The last 15 months of Malcolm X's life were momentous, a time of tremendous personal development, and a time when opposing forces converged against him. Up until November of 1963, he had been Elijah Muhammad's first lieutenant in the Nation of Islam, or the Black Muslims as they were also known. The Muslims were closely watched by government agencies, and Malcolm was a prime surveillance target. Attempts were made to divide this group by infiltrating their ranks and playing one human failing against the other. Now, I have here several pounds of FBI files on Malcolm X alone that support what we say and much, much more. See? Let's take a look at one of these documents. The document is entitled, "The Rift Widens Between Elijah Muhammad and His Principal Lieutenant Malcolm X Little." Part of it reads, "Little has attempted to develop sympathy and backing for his position. Feels that Elijah Muhammad is in his declining years. Would not hesitate one moment to take over the leadership of the Nation of Islam. While Muhammad may be getting older, he is far from ready to hand over the reins." The memo concludes with a statement that reads, "The attached memo or memorandum could possibly widen the rift between Muhammad and Little and possibly result in Little's expulsion from the Nation of Islam." Now, these memos were circulated by the FBI during the period when Malcolm had been silenced for 90 days by Elijah for his comments about President Kennedy's assassination in November of 1963. Interestingly, during the same period of silence, the FBI paid a visit to Malcolm's home in Queens and made some fascinating overtures. Now, it just so happens that Malcolm had installed a hidden microphone in his living room and had taped the conversation. And fortuitously, I acquired that recording. One of his aides, Earl Grant, explained how that hidden microphone came to be.
"I got him in the habit of recording everything. I even had a little portable tape recorder. Used to carry around with me, and so I got all those tapes. And so I told him he should have one at his house. But you never know who's going to come by, even start taping his telephone calls, you know, so he'd have a record of everything. And so we had a very high quality machine. It was under his couch and had a little switch he could click it on. And so that was set up for that kind of eventuality. Mm-hmm. If you ever got any visitors for any kind of reason and he wanted a record of what was said, they'd never know he was taping them."
"Morning, how do you do?
We're with the FBI.
You have a couple minutes while I'm talking?"
"No, a couple of minutes."
"Your name is
Beckwith?"
"Beckwith,
right.
And your name is
Fulton.
Fulton.
Right.
From which
New York.
There's only one.
Only one here.
It's probably what you assumed we came for, to obtain any information you want to give us about the Muslims.
I don't assume anything.
No. That's a very general statement on my part. But as you know, we follow the activities of the Muslims as best we can. But we're always looking for new avenues of information, and who better than, than the head of the Muslims? At least up to a month ago or something like that.
We're wondering, how's your suspension status?
No one knows but Mr. Muhammad. You have to ask him.
You're still in the status of now. You're not working now or teaching now at all.
I'm still under the suspension.
That's what I'm asking. Yeah.
That's a temporary thing.
He's the only one who can give out any information. I couldn't say anything beyond what he has said.
Yeah, I think he has said that it's a temporary suspension. One of the reasons we picked this particular time to contact you is because of this suspension.
The suspension was brought about by my own doing.
Yeah, exactly. But who knows what was in your mind when you did receive the suspension. In other words, bitterness could have entered into it. It would not be illogical for someone to have spent so many years doing something than be suspended.
No, it should make him stronger, because it makes him realize that law applies to the law enforcer as well as those who are under the enforcement of the enforcer.
Well, you've taken nearly a perfect attitude toward the thing, which is almost unhuman, really. You've taken the attitude that Mr. Muhammad wants everyone to take if he chastises them. Which is fine. I mean, more power to you. But you see, from our viewpoint, that there's at least a chance, and this has happened with other members of your organization, they're suspended for some reason or other. And we talk to them, and they stand people up to, and they're, of course, cooperative people. Why? Of course, they're bitter. Now, assuming you resume your duties, we would be, as you sure know, interested in having you help us out.
Help you out to do what? We're always helping out the government. We're cleaning up all of the crimes that...
Fine.
We help it out more than it helps itself. We're at least able to reform the people who have been made criminal by this society.
That's right.
By the corruption of this society. And any way to help it out other than that, I wouldn't even know how to begin.
Well, what we're interested in, basically, the people who belong, the names, the members.
My telephone number is 01-6320.
OL-16320. Now, by this suggestion,
that's like telling you the sun shines in the east, from the east.
Well, no comment. And the teachings, plans, the programs.
No teaching is more public than ours, and I don't think you find anybody more blunt.
It's incredible that one man built up so much momentum. His death is a inertia spark, a generation. And it was plain for them to see what he meant to you and me. But one to the chin and one to the chest didn't stop the movement.
We have been listening. That was Michael Ferrante. Before that, the Mellifluous Tones. Malcolm X, the end of white world supremacy. Malcolm X, the end of white world supremacy. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. And we are nearing the end of our program, Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy. And I want you to just know, some of you may already, that on April 3rd, 1964, at Corey Methodist Church in Cleveland, Ohio, Malcolm X advised African Americans to judiciously exercise their right to vote. But he cautioned that if the government continued to prevent African Americans from attaining full equality, the organization of Afro-American unity and the broader community would proceed by any means necessary. And that was just a small clip that you heard from what is commonly referred to as the Ballad of the Bullet. Well, we've been bringing you this program because we are horrified by the commercialization and trivialization of Malcolm's life as against his strong revolutionary principles and his clear pan-Africanist commitment that was sweeping through legions of black communities across the United States. Malcolm's life and legacy continues to be deliberately suppressed, and so we are committed to passing on the living legacy of Malcolm X, Elhaj Malik al-Shabazz, to honor and pay tribute to this great warrior who at the time of his assassination was rapidly emerging as the leader of the black liberation struggle for land, for independence and reparations here in the United States. We bring you this material to carry forth his message of black liberation. And without black liberation, this country, we all will never truly experience democracy. Democracy with a big D. It is now but a hollow shell. WBAI is a very special place because it dares to struggle and it dares to win, and it does so not in the name of the people but with the people. That's who comprise the programmers here. That's where the material comes from, the communities of marginalized, of disenfranchised, of people who are the movers and shakers, though, to realize the promise of democracy, of equal rights and justice. And in the minute that I have left, and I trust that for yourself, for your family, for your friends, for your community, for the liberation struggle, all of us, get this package, Malcolm X, this study guide, Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy, 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy, a $185 contribution, and you will support this extraordinarily important radio station. And those of us who are Caucasian, let us make it so by listening to and studying and thinking and internalizing the words of Martin Luther King, of leaders like Malcolm X, who we're focusing on particularly today. Decolonize our minds and take these words and ideas and thoughts, develop an Afrocentric consciousness, etc., and take them to the communities in which we reside to further and become better allies, and to become allies at all in the liberation struggle. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy, a $185 contribution. Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy. I'm out of here. Mimi Rosenberg, I thank you for listening and urge you to get Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy. 212-209-2950. $185 pledge for a priceless history of struggle brought right to you. Thank you for listening. Stay strong. Stay well. But do support WBAI. Malcolm X, The End of White World Supremacy. It's yours for the asking.
Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more backward thinking. Time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be.
WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. It's 7 a.m. coming up.